Save big at Menards and prepare for the summer heat with a new air conditioner from Denali Air. Quickly and efficiently cool your spaces with auto and eco modes to maximize performance and save on energy costs. Cool your space from anywhere in the room with three cooling speeds and a remote control. Save big money on Denali Air air conditioners. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Or join us over in the Discord room. You can find the link to that off of the beekeepingfornewbies.com homepage. Link should be over there on the left. And if you're looking for some interesting articles on intro to beekeeping or some varroa mite treatment options or a couple of quick how-to, quick start guides and things, you can go to bestbeekeepinggear.com. We're trying to put some information up there fairly regularly to help out new beekeepers. Well, everybody, happy 4th of July. This was supposed to be the, 2nd of July. I don't even know what day it is today. Thursday, Friday. It was supposed to be Monday's episode. And it just didn't happen, and there's a lot going on. I actually have some tooth trauma, and I still don't feel like I'm even talking right, but had a tooth issue going on, and like I went to the dentist this week, oral surgeon this week, all kinds of stuff, and I've got this wiggly tooth right in the front, lower, driving me absolutely insane, and I really don't even want to talk. Like every time I move my mouth, I feel this tooth, and it's driving me up a wall, but good news. My buddy, it's the horse guy. He removes horse teeth a lot and he can do it for free in the barn. So we're probably going to go that route. Okay. Today's warm-up song is Bad Romance by Lady Gaga. Thank you, Lady Gaga, today. And today we're talking about episode 160, alternative hive types. Now, as you know, we have pretty much for the past 5 years, every discussion, everything we've talked about has really been centered around the Langstroth hive. And the idea behind this is I wanted to have a baseline. I wanted to make sure if somebody said, hey, I'm trying to assemble all of my hardware and I'm not sure where this goes or where that goes, or it's inspection time, how should I do this and that? If we're working off of a baseline, everybody's doing the same thing. The other component to that, or the other kind of driver behind that decision, is because of the wide availability of Langstroth hardware, whether it's 8-frame or 10-frame. It's everywhere. It's easy to find. You would think that that would kind of drive the cost down because of just how available it is, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Oh, while we're on that subject, quick sidebar, Amazon Prime, whatever days, I think it's next week starting on the 8th. Sometimes you get some great deals. Sometimes they'll jack the price up and then bring it back down a couple days later so it doesn't really come out to be a deal. But there's an app that I have. It's a little widget. If you're interested in it, just drop me a message. I'll send you a link. But it's a little widget that embeds itself like in the browser, I guess. And whenever you see the price of something, it shows you the history down below. So you can see if it's actually a lower price or not. It's kind of a cool thing. But anyway, that's coming up starting on the 8th next week. So be sure to load your cart up and your wish list and all your cool beekeeping supplies and all that good stuff. Anyway, so yeah, we standardized on the Langstroth hive just because of how available it is, and it's just simple. You know, every time someone wants to ask a question, I want to be able to give them an answer that is just consistent and pretty straightforward. But I also recognize that over time, you know, people want to try different things. They want to experiment, especially when you get good, right? You've had a couple of years now of overwintering hives. You're getting into a rhythm, and you want to explore things or try different things. And there are some hive types that are actually, like, I would never really recommend generically to go with anything other than Langstroth starting out, just to keep it simple and to make everything a bit more, I don't want to say regimented, but it's just you can create a systematic approach to inspections and management and it's simple, but there are reasons why other hives might even be a good starting point, and we're going to talk about that today. But being able to experiment and try something new and bring different things into your apiary, I think it's a great idea. But I'm still going to tell you guys, I really, really recommend, don't try to get fancy and cute with bringing in like 5 or 6 different types of hardware and setups. One, it gets really expensive. And we're going to talk about some of the options here today. But let's say you brought in a horizontal hive. And you're like, oh, I just want to try the horizontal hive. Well, cool. If you're doing that and it's just a regular based on Langstroth, then your big expense is just the physical box itself that it's going into. But there are still management considerations and things that you don't even understand how to be a beekeeper yet. And now you're trying to understand the dynamics and how things are different in a horizontal hive as one example. So I still tell everybody, start with the Langstroth. It's a good baseline entry level. You know, it's good for all beekeepers. If you wanted to, if you said, I just wanted to get one thing and it's cost effective and that's all I want to do forever, just buy nothing but medium boxes, medium frames, and stick with that for the rest of your life and you'll be happy, hopefully. Well, you won't be happy because you're a beekeeper. So you're going to be, it's going to be like the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat because you're always going to be, it's okay. If you've ever heard of, you know, bipolar disorder, and I'm not trying to make light of it because it's obviously a serious disorder, but being a beekeeper is very much similar to being bipolar. You're really, really happy and excited one day, and you're really, really sad, depressed, upset, or whatever the next. It's unfortunate that's the way it is, but keeping things simple with Langstroth allows you to just minimize some of those challenges. So today we're going to talk about 3 types. We're going to talk about top bar, horizontal, and the Waray style of hives. So we're going to go through a little bit of history on a couple of them, what makes them different, some pros and cons, and then we'll talk about at the end, we'll talk about what we're going to do next week. So let's jump right in here, and we'll start with the top bar hives. So top bar hives are one of the oldest styles in the world. There's evidence of these that goes all the way back like thousands of years to ancient Greece, where beekeepers, you know, managed colonies in the clay pots or the baskets with the wooden sticks or bars, you know, laid across the top. Bees, of course, are going to build the comb downward from those sticks, just like they do in, you know, regular modern top bar setup today. Now, today's top bar hive, you have a single long horizontal box. And instead of stacking boxes like you do with a Langstroth, you just lift up, you know, like a hinged lid. And inside are a series of wooden bars, and they are laid across the top of that cavity. And the bees build the comb, you know, naturally down, just like they do in a cavity. So there's no plastic foundation. There's no wiring of frames or anything like that. It's not a fully wooden frame, you know, with edges all the way around. You just have the wooden top bar, and that's it. Each bar usually consists of like a wedge or a groove to kind of help. Maybe you could put like a starter strip in there or something that kind of gives a place, just a good starting point to start building that comb. And then the bars are going to be, you know, side by side pretty tightly, just like you would in any other type of a hive setup. Now, I want to talk real briefly here about the up versus down. This is a discussion that there's a little bit of background noise you're probably going to hear too, right? We're getting ready to go out on the water for the day here, so you might hear some things in the kitchen clinging around. But anyway, there's a lot of discussion and confusion that I hear with some regularity around how bees use space and build space. And we're not talking specifically about air quotes like bee space today, right? That's where you have, where you add a honey super as an example and the bees don't touch it. Or you have one deep and they're building out, they're maybe 6-7 frames in and they don't touch the side frames or they don't move up, right? That's bee space, right? We're not talking about that today, which we can, you know, we've talked about before. Definitely a good discussion to have every spring when you're trying to get things built out. But today I'm specifically talking about how are bees building and how do they build within a natural cavity. And it's very common sense, right? It's a common sense thing to think about, but it just sometimes we kind of don't always look at it from the right perspective. So the bees are going to start building from the top. So imagine a hollowed out piece of tree, you know, where the bees have found an entrance in the front and they have this nice little hollow cavity. They are going to go to the top of that cavity and they're going to start drawing comb down from that. And they will come down to a certain point. They will then move to the sides, and they will move down to an equal point. And they kind of balance it out, and then they'll build on from where they left off. And, you know, eventually they'll get pretty close to filling up the whole cavity or most of the cavity. And then they start saying, okay, maybe it's time for us to think about swarming, typically like the following spring or maybe a couple springs, depending on, you know, how large the colony is. But I've heard people argue and debate this because they're talking about two different things. The construction and building naturally moves downward. And it's funny, somebody had emailed me a few years ago and they said, hey, have you ever just considered putting new boxes on the bottom, you know, first? You know, when you want to add a new box, just put it on the bottom instead of on the top. And I said, well, no, because they build out the brood space and then you add a box on top and they might put one or two more brood comb, you know, brood frames in, and then they're going to fill honey up there and it just works. And for some reason, like my brain didn't grasp the very basic, simple and natural concept here. But if you were to put that box underneath, that would actually be very consistent with what bees would do in the wild. The reason that we don't do that, though, is because we do ideally want to keep our honey frames and our brood frames separate. So if you have, let's just say as an example, you had a single deep, you know, Langstroth hive set up, and you have 8 frames of it are mostly all brood, and then they go above that, and maybe you have a frame or two of brood, and then they start filling honey to the sides. You can manage those honey frames and move them around pretty easily. If you go ahead and add that box to the bottom, there's a good likelihood that they will continue moving down and then laying brood down below that. And then maybe later in the summer or in the fall, they'll start backfilling the upper brood area with honey. And it's just kind of an inverse thing. It'll work 100% fine. The bees will absolutely use it and they'll use it efficiently. And there's nothing wrong with doing it. I'm speaking about how you are interacting with them as the beekeeper. I think it might make things a bit more challenging for you. I do actually have a running list. Those of you who have talked to me in the Discord room pretty regularly, I have a running list in the in my notes of things to try out, experiment with, and play with. And this is on my list to do. So probably next spring when I'm running all these experiments in the yard here, I'll add this one to the list to say, okay, instead of adding our new boxes and supers on top, honey supers will be on top, but as far as adding new brood boxes, we're going to go down below and we're going to see how that works out just to kind of try it out. But I wanted to make sure you understand that bees will naturally build from top down, and then they will consume resources over the winter bottom up. So that's kind of the way the up down and bottom up works. There's a lot of confusion with that. Now, shifting back to the top bar hive, there are some advantages to this because with the top bar, one, I like the minimalist approach. You're just dealing with the one single wooden bar across the top. And like I said, you can put a starter strip on it or not. That's kind of up to you. But that's all you have to manage is these individual hives. You do need to pay attention to some of the potential for there to be some cross comb for them to build, you know, from one piece of comb across to the adjacent one. And that's where I've mentioned several times about how I like to have a long fillet knife handy. You can just kind of reach in and just trim those things up sometimes if you need to. But you're not lifting up big boxes and supers and moving them around. So that's pretty cool. And you're managing it by the single frame. So at the most, maybe a single frame, you know, 5, 6, 7 pounds at the most when you're pulling one of these frames out. You don't need to have extractors and any kind of specialized equipment when you want to get honey because, you know, it's kind of all going to be on the same frame. So you could cut off what you needed. A lot of times what people will do is they'll just cut all but maybe the top, you know, a couple of inches off, and then do sort of like the crush and strain method of harvesting, because you're not going to put these into an extractor. So if you've made a big investment in an extractor and you really like the decapping and extracting process, this may not be the best thing for you. But you know, a lot of people get these almost as like a side hobby, side project kind of thing. Like, it's not necessarily all about honey. It's doing things in a very natural way. It's very natural for the bees, and it's really cool for observation because a lot of people will add an observation window to it, and you can just kind of open it up and let people look at them. So these types of top bar and horizontal type hives, they're really good for allowing others to view bee activity, and it's a cool, neat kind of thing. But anyway, yeah, extractors and all that kind of stuff, you're not going to be doing that. So it's less equipment overall. You know, you're not dealing with the frames and the foundation and queen excluders and stacking all the boxes and all of that. And if you want to build them, there's tons of plans online. I don't think I've posted any of them. If you need some, let me know. I'm sure I've got them somewhere. But if you're relatively basic with, you know, some entry level, mid level kind of carpentry skills, you know, you cut a few pieces of wood, glue and nail them together, and, you know, you're up and running. If you've got the financial ability to do so, you buy one online, they'll ship it to you, maybe hook the legs onto it after that. Pretty straightforward build. But they're definitely a really, really cool and neat approach. And again, everything in beekeeping, in my opinion anyway, you have to really, I shouldn't say everything in beekeeping, I think you as an individual beekeeper, it's really helpful if you can establish what your goals are in beekeeping early on. I think that's going to be a really, really big driver. If you like the all natural or close as possible to natural, I think the top bar approach is probably about as close as you're going to get to that. It's just a very simple and natural way of doing things. If you're like, I just want honey, I've told people several times before, if honey is your big driver, just go to the farmer's market and buy honey. I promise you it's going to be cheaper. You'll walk in and buy like a big jug of honey for $100. Still going to be cheaper than you dealing with all the pain of learning how to beekeep. The struggle is real. Now, there are some challenges with the top bar hives that, you know, we should probably talk about. So the comb, you know, can be a little bit fragile, especially in the summertime, right? Think about any time you've had anything in your car on a hot summer day and you get in and it's like melty, or if you had like, I don't eat these anymore. I love them to death, man. But there's those like, I don't know if it's Little Debbie or Hostess, whoever, but they have those like white glazed honey buns. Like one of the greatest tasting things in the world. Worst, it's like top 10 worst things you can probably eat. There's like 4,000 calories in every one of them. Take an empty package of that and just throw it like on the floor of your car or on the passenger seat or whatever. And get in the car on a hot day and it's like half melted, right? Like that's what the comb, when it gets really, really hot, it becomes fragile. So in the absence of that support system that a traditional Langstroth frame has, you want to be cognizant of the fact that you are only being supported by that top bar. You also want to pay attention. I mentioned it briefly about cross comb and how they can definitely build a cross. You want to pay close attention to that because the Langstroth hive with that rigid frame, it allows you some flexibility where if there is some cross comb and they've done some wonky comb and connected a couple of adjacent frames, you have a little bit more rigidity to that structure to remove the frame, and maybe you're going to tear the comb and not rip everything completely apart. When you have a top bar, it's much, much easier to separate everything and completely rip it and destroy that whole section of comb. So you really, really got to be careful with that. We mentioned before about the kind of centrifugal force extractors, like that's not going to happen. It's going to be all crush and strain. Definitely not ideal. Again, if you're looking to do large scale honey production, if you just wanted to have a little honey for yourself, by all means, great approach. You know, you can definitely do that. And you also need to pay attention for the sidewalls. You know, sometimes in the top bar, they'll draw down and they're running out of space, and then they'll start drawing off on the inner walls as well. So you want to pay close attention to that. And that's also a great time to consider adding in a second one or possibly moving some swarm cells over and starting a second colony. Now, there's another component to a lot of these types of hives that we're discussing called a follower board. And I want to talk about this a little bit earlier here so that you'll know that this is an option that you can use in all of these types of hives. And it's very similar. In fact, somebody was talking about it in the Discord room. They defined it slightly differently, that they called it like a spacer frame. And you would be taking a frame, and you can do whatever you want with it. You can do solid wood or some kind of a light wood filler, maybe on both sides. But you're basically filling a space where the bees cannot draw comb. So imagine in a Langstroth hive, if you just had a single frame that was solid on both sides, just solid wood on both sides that you could drop in to create like a boundary. That's something that you can do for a variety of reasons that I'm not necessarily going to get into here, but this is of particular importance when you're using these horizontal style hives because of that kind of natural tendency to want to move up, and you don't want to have this big wide space for them to try to figure out. But let's say, as an example, like in a traditional or typical kind of top bar setup, you may have, you know, 20 or 25 horizontal, you know, hives or horizontal frames going across. You don't want to just drop the bees in and have all this space to manage. So what you're going to do is you may give them, let's say, 5 frames to start with, dividing up the space on the sides. As they start building out, you move the follower board over and you're expanding the space kind of on the fly. So it creates a defined boundary for the colony. It prevents the bees from building comb in the unused space, which would otherwise kind of be a little bit chaotic, and it might create some unsupported comb. And then, you know, during the colder months, the follower board can also be used to, again, shrink that cavity down to help preserve the heat and increase that likelihood of improving kind of winter survival numbers. So making sure that you have that follower board is definitely going to come in handy. And again, you can have two, one on each side if you wanted to keep things more towards the middle, but you can always just gradually move towards the middle over time. And I would still recommend when you're adding, you know, new top bars, to just slide them left or right and make a space in the middle. They really hate their brood space being broken up. And a little tip, if you're setting up any of these we're talking about today, you really want to make sure you get this as level as possible. You may want a slight tilt to, you know, forward a little bit, just in case there's any liquid or anything on the inside from a storm or whatever may happen with condensation. But you definitely want to have it level side to side. You want that comb to be drawn down nice and evenly, not at a weird, you know, kind of angle because you've got one side 4 inches higher than the other. And again, backyard, small hobbyist, you know, more natural, low intervention style of beekeeping, people looking to not have to lift big, heavy boxes and having expensive, you know, honey extracting equipment. These are all great reasons for like a top bar kind of setup.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Now, I'm going to move over to the horizontal hive here, and this is not all that different from a traditional Langstroth hive. It's just that we're going to go horizontally instead of vertically. So just like with the top bar, you know, you're not going to be lifting up heavy boxes. You're not going to be having to stack things, rearrange things, you know, deal with all of the height, potential height issues as things go higher and higher. It's all going to stay horizontal. So the bees are going to extend everything sideways, just like they would, you know, in any type of horizontal type of layout. You're doing the same thing, you know, with the follower board, just like we discussed on the top bar. But the real question in the horizontal setup is, are you going to stick with the two, I think, most popular would be like a long Langstroth, what they call long Langstroth. So it's basically Langstroth frames going horizontally, or the Layens hive. They both use that same kind of horizontal layout. It's just some differences in size, and obviously the equipment's not compatible with each other. So first I'll talk about the long Langstroth. This is going to be somewhere between, you know, 36 inches, 3 feet, and 48 inches, 4 feet. So like just over like 1 to 1.25 meters, something like that. The nice thing with this is it's particularly great. There's a member, or not a member of the Discord, but somebody who is a listener who has emailed me that is a disabled veteran. They're actually starting a business trying to really focus a lot on horizontal hive kind of configurations, building them professionally. And the idea is for folks, you know, like himself, who's had some service-related injuries, and many of us out there who have issues with our backs and other things, trying to find a method that allows, I mean, think about somebody who can roll up in a wheelchair and pull up to the side and do an inspection. Right. And there's different things out there today that are allowing veterans and others who've had injuries to be able to do inspections and perform beekeeping tasks from a seated position. And there's some neat things being done with actually removing frames with one hand, with the assisting devices and other things. So this gentleman's working on putting something together with that. Anyway, on the Langstroth, long Langstroth, you're using the same equipment. You might be, you know, somewhere in that 20 to 30 frames wide. You're going to use a follower board again to minimize the space. Certainly easy to build if you're following regular Langstroth kind of length dimensions, and you just make it wider. You can do custom if you want. However you want to do it, it's fine. There are some very technical reasons why horizontal building is different from vertical. And it deals to a lot of overwintering and the heat and how heat moves up, and being horizontal doesn't really get a chance to move up in the same way. There are some dynamics about that, but I don't really want to dive into that today because we have so much hardware to kind of cover. If somebody's like, hey, I really want to talk about the thermodynamics of horizontal hives and beekeeping, we'll do a separate episode and discussion around that. Now, some things that aren't necessarily as great with this horizontal long Langstroth kind of approach. It does have a bigger footprint in the yard. I mean, it's probably going to be, you know, 2 to 3 times as wide, maybe. They can still be heavy, so you want to make sure that even though you're not having to lift them every day, you do want a very solid surface underneath. So you may lay down some stone, and then on top of the stone, you may use some kind of 4x4 supports or whatever. Just, you know, be smart ahead of time. Ask people in the Discord room. Ask your mentor or your bee club for some suggestions and recommendations, but just make sure you have a really sturdy foundation that you're working from. And you really want to pay attention to, because the horizontal expansion, it definitely changes some of the swarming cues and some frame management. So you'll want to pay attention to it, just the bee behavior. Just watch the bees, see what they're doing, pay attention to how they're laying, what does the frame look like, what is on the frame, and how are they storing things in adjacent frames in relation to that one. A lot of it's going to be very much the same. But again, there's just their mindset of this, the vertical, natural vertical movement is going to have to get adapted. Now, I wouldn't worry about this too much. Don't get hung up on, oh, no, it has to be vertical or it'll never work. Like, that's my thing with the horizontals. I don't like it. My brain can't do it. My brain cannot wrap around the idea of going horizontally. Completely counterintuitive to me, and I can't do it. I just can't. And I know that it works. Like, if you look in a roof, like in a like roof rafters, there's a slight slope to that. But how many houses have you seen where they cut the roof open and you've got all through the rafters a bunch of honeycomb? And that's sort of horizontal, horizontalish with a slight elevation to it. The bees figure it out. They make it work. I just individually can't wrap my arms around it. And because of that, I'm out. Next option is a Layens hive. So Layens hive is completely different horizontal system. It was originally developed in Europe, and it gained a lot of interest in the U.S., and it's still, a lot of people today are still asking about it and trying to check it out. And kind of what sets it apart a little bit is the large, deep, you know, insulated frames. They're designed to support a compact, thermally stable kind of brood nest, much like the bees would build when they're in an actual tree cavity. So a standard Layens frame is approximately 13 inches wide. That's going to be like kind of the top bar length. And then 16 inches deep. So it is significantly larger than a standard Langstroth deep frame. Now, these oversized frames allow bees to raise brood and store resources and honey in a much more kind of contiguous space with less interruption of those wooden frame parts and pieces. Like if this single frame were in a medium configuration, well, you're going, you know, two and a half mediums high just to achieve the same thing you're getting on one standard Layens frame. So I think that's pretty cool. And same thing, they're typically going to be in that 12 to 20 frame kind of category if you decide to go this route, and it's a single, you know, insulated box. Most of them, or many of them, I should say, are constructed with really thick wood walls, and they're built around some insulation to protect against cold. So if you're one of those people in those cooler environments, going with something that is pre-built with thicker insulated walls, and then, of course, you can add, whether you're doing a quilt box. My big thing against quilt boxes is that a lot of people are like, why does Jeff hate quilt boxes? I hate quilt boxes because a lot of people throw a lot of people will throw a significant amount of insulation up into the top of this area that they're storing, you know, or that they're configuring for their quilt box. And it's just insulation up there. And then the moisture gets up there, and the moisture saturates the insulation. And wet insulation does nothing. It provides no value, no R factor, no nothing. So wet insulation doesn't work. Because of that, I use the styrofoam insulation in mine. It does not absorb a bunch of water. It kind of rolls off, and it works really, really well. So that's my big thing against quilt boxes. If you've got a solution that manages the moisture, keeps it dry, and allows it to be an insulator, perfect. Whatever your top insulation solution is, great. But this is something that's a bit more inherent to what I've seen, or at least the ones I've seen on the Layens side. kind of it's inherently designed for that already. I don't know what they do on the top. I'm not real deep with these. I don't use them myself, but I think it's definitely a cool thing. What I like most about it is having a lot of resources on one frame. Now, yeah, it's probably a little bit heavier than like a standard Langstroth frame, which we'll talk about that in your pros and cons sections. But unlike the Langstroth, the Lands is still, it's a more of a hands-off minimal intervention kind of approach. Okay, so let's go through some pros and cons here. So they're good with thermal regulation due to the deeper frames, the insulation. Now, one pro to it in some ways is a lot of people are getting these because I guess some have advertised them as less intervention needed, fewer inspections and things because of Varroa, because of IPM challenges, because of small hive beetle and other things. I don't care what kind of hive style and approach that you're using, like IPM, integrated pest management, this has to be top of mind. So in the old days, like you could just set a hive up and have basically very little involvement, and you could just have a beehive and a colony that would live there, and they would supersede, and new queen would replace, and it would just keep going for decades. And this is not an unusual thing at all. You just can't be that hands-off with Varroa anymore. You have to be active, engaged in solving that, at least for your bees. Don't worry about what other people are doing. That's their problem. Fix your bees first. Focus on taking care of your bees. So I have this in the pros column as far as like fewer inspections kind of needed. Now, one of the cons here is that obviously it's got its own unique gear, right? So if you've got a couple hundred, you know, Langstroth frames around, bad news for you. None of this is going to be compatible. Right. So these larger frames, they can be a little bit awkward to handle, especially when they are fully drawn and they're filled with, you know, honey and a lot of anything. The other thing, too, is it's not as well known. There are fewer people in the U.S. and particularly mentors, people who can help you learn how to use them properly. Now, the beauty of like YouTube and other things, you can find people who are going to tell you all the tricks of the trade of how to use these things. The problem I would say with that is while that's a great resource to have, like everything else, there's a ton of really, really bad information out there. And I think a lot of people have started to realize, a lot of people have decided, look, I'm not going to worry about quality. I'm just going to get on YouTube every day and make a video about something and ramble. And I'm going to have enough volume of information out there that eventually I'll get enough people watching that will get me monetized. And it doesn't matter if my information is good. And when people yell at me and tell me how bad I am and how terrible that my video is and how everything I'm doing is wrong, that's engagement. Those comments help the algorithm and they help that person get in front of more people. So you're propagating disinformation over and over and over again. So you really, really have to be careful in beekeeping. Like I tell you guys, listen to me and take what I have with, you know, what I tell you with a grain of salt and go ask somebody else. You know, and I've had people say, hey, man, like, I'm kind of concerned you said this and I don't think that's right. I don't mind that at all because we're all learning and we're growing together. Right. So if I make a mistake or I misspeak or if I'm just flat out wrong, I really would like to know about it. So don't hesitate to reach out if you think I'm wrong. We can have a nice little happy debate about it and go from there. But you're not going to have as many folks who know the Lands as people who know Langstroth. And again, there's that big upfront initial investment. If you're not using any of that hardware today, you're kind of starting over from scratch and buying a whole lot of new hardware that, again, not compatible. Okay, so we're going to move on to our last one of the day today. And this is the Warre, W-A-R-R-E, with an accent aigu for the French folks out there. The accent on the E that is leaning from left to right. I can't believe there's like five things I remember from French. The accent aigu is that one. So the Warre hive is often called the People's Hive or Ruche Populaire, developed in the early 20th century by French monk Abbé Émile Warre. After studying more than 300 hive designs, Warre aimed to create a hive that was simple, natural, affordable, and aligned with how bees live in the wild. The result is a vertical hive system that looks similar to Langstroth at first, but functions very differently. So the design and the structure of this, so these are going to be stacked vertical boxes. And, you know, Warre hives, they're made of small square boxes. And just like Langstroth, where you know, kind of stack them on top of each other, it's the same kind of concept as far as a physical box, but they're not opened and manipulated as frequently. We'll talk about that in a minute. There are foundationless top bars. So inside of each box, instead of standard frames, Warre uses a top bar. So just like a wooden guide, just like we talked about with the other top bar hives, and that's going to be across the top of that cavity, and bees are going to draw their own natural comb from those bars. Now, there is a management term called nadiring, okay, and this is the key management differentiator in the Wari approach compared to others. So instead of placing new hive boxes on top, you're going to add these on underneath. I kind of alluded to that a little bit early on as to that, you know, just general as a way of doing things. But this nadiring process adds new boxes underneath, which encourages the bees to continue drawing downward just like they would in a natural tree cavity. The cool thing with, you know, Wari hives, they're easy to build, just basic woodworking tools, pretty affordable lumber. There's no complex joinery or frame making or any special hardware to just, you know, make the boxes that you would use in this kind of setup. So this is another one of those styles of hive that's good for people who are going for more of a natural, sort of the air quotes, treatment-free beekeeping, which still scares the bejesus out of me, but I like to, you know, at least recognize that some people are going forward with that approach. Okay, I'm going to take a pause here and talk about that. I would absolutely love to have a 100% all-natural, no-treatment beehive. That would be great. There are different... obviously, you can get queens that have varroa-sensitive hygiene that are bred to be able to kind of sniff out that varroa mite inside of the cell, yank out the developing, pupating worker or drone, throw it out of the hive before they have a chance to reproduce. That's really cool. That's really awesome. If you have the ability to do very attentive, detailed management and research, and you are really, really staying close with the numbers and paying attention to things, I think that going for a treatment-free approach is okay. I think most people, I can't say that scientifically here. I think a lot of people do it because it's just a lazy way of saying, I'm going to be natural, because they just don't feel like spending the money on the treatments. If you are doing nothing, if you are not at least starting with varroa-sensitive queens, VSH queens, that's just a starting point. That is not the end-all be-all. You have a VSH queen, and that's awesome. But you're a brand new beekeeper, and you've decided that I'm getting this VSH queen that I spent $50 or $80 or $400 on. I've seen some pretty crazy pricing on them. You buy this VSH queen or a colony, you know, a nuke with a VSH queen, and then you're brand new, and you mess up, and you poorly manage them, and they swarm, and now your VSH queen is gone. So, yes, you do have her genetics left behind, and those genetics now have to go out and breed openly with drones who probably do not have the VSH trait. So you're losing those genetics. Right off the bat, you're losing those genetics. So that to me is probably the biggest problem. But outside of that element of things, if someone says, I am treatment free, then I'm assuming that means there is some treatment or some, at least some monitoring taking place. And a lot of people aren't even doing that. So what is the strategy, right? I mean, if you're going to go into beekeeping and you say, I'm going in treatment free and we're going to be all natural. Okay. But at some point you have to recognize you're in the business of animal husbandry, right? Just like you have livestock. If you have a field of 100 head of cattle and you're like, we're going to be all natural, and all of your cattle start getting sick and they're laying on the ground and they're going to die, do you just let them die and be like, no, we're all natural. They're, you know, natural selection. We're just going to let them all die. Or do you say, geez, well, that didn't work out so well. Let me save the lives of my cattle. Your honeybees are the same thing. You want to try all natural. That's cool. By all means, get your VSH queens. Do whatever you want to do. Try putting oregano oil or whatever things you want to put in there that you think may be all natural and work. And I'll God bless you, man. I hope you come up with a solution that works, because I'd love to know what it is. Share it with the rest of the world. That's great. Somebody's got to do the research. But do it in a scientific way. Keep notes. Keep detailed logs. Do mite washes. Do the assessments to realize, wow, the all-natural thing's not working because my mite count is 40. You know, I'm 40 out of 300. It's like, that's ridiculous, right? You've got to know. There's a line you got to stop and say, okay, this isn't any good. So sorry for the little sidebar there, but I had to kind of go off on the natural beekeeping thing. I love it conceptually. It's just not practical. But a lot of people who are doing natural type beekeeping or want to have minimal intervention and they want the bees to be doing things in the way that is most natural to them really, really respond well to like the Wari and the Top Bar and these other styles of hive that just promote this natural comb building kind of behavior. It's kind of more cost effective too when you're dealing with a slim strip of wood, you know, as opposed to some of these $4, $5, $6 frames. Now, again, a lot of these have a similar problem with lower honey yield. That's going to be an issue. You're going to have it's just more tricky to get to some of the honey. You're not going to be using your extractors in the same way. But as long as you're comfortable with the squish and strain method, you know, you can still certainly get honey out there for yourself to enjoy and to share with friends. And of course, it does introduce some of that more fragile comb situation, especially when it's hot, but also for pest monitoring. You know, a lot of times we'll take frames and we'll shake bees into a container, and then we'll take our sample group from that. A little bit more difficult with some of these top bar kinds of layouts. You know, you start shaking these frames and you may have a very large piece of comb come crashing down. All right, so I'm going to try and do a quick, and again, this is meant to be an overview. It's not like a deep dive. If somebody really cared, if we had a lot of people that were emailing, they're like, oh my God, Jeff, I want to be a Waray expert. Like, we could actually go into dimensions and talk about things. And at some point, if I actually had more than like three people saying that they were interested in it, I would put that in my apiary and show you how to use it. But honestly, I've literally had nobody say, I really want to have the Waray. Like, it sounds like a great way to go. I've had a few people ask about, well, a lot of people ask about horizontal hives. A few people have asked about top bar. I really like top bar. I think it's really cool and it's neat and something that I want to do. I just don't have the cycles for it today. But anyway, so going through it on a quick recap of everything that we talked about. We've got top bar hives, right? Single bar across the top, very natural method. Then we got the Waray style, similar thing on the top with the top bar, but you're adding boxes below, expanding naturally down low. You have the long Langstroth, which is just a horizontal widthwise version using the same Langstroth frames. And then the lay-ins, which I think is also super cool, which is going to be different horizontal system with much, much deeper. I really like those deep frames. That's where it goes back to what is your motivating force, the driving factor behind your beekeeping. If you just want to keep bees, some of these like horizontal approaches and some of the top bar approaches, like all of these present really neat, natural ways to view and observe bees doing things the way they like to do them. When your big driver is to be in the commercial space and to be producing a lot of honey, you got to go a different route. Quick kind of last example on this. If you went somewhere and you said, hey man, I want to team up with you and do some pollination contracts or whatever, I'm going to roll up with all my horizontal hives or my top bar hives, that's not going to work, right? You've got to be able to have people who can work. If you're on a team, let's just say simply you have three or four different apiaries teaming up together on a pollination contract. Everybody's going to be working together doing things. Somebody's going to say, hey, look, over in this area, we need this done. This needs to be done over here. And you're just going to be working across each other's things and helping each other out. Or, you know, as far as loading and unloading goes, you need things that are standardized and consistent. So as an example, you may say, all of us are going to contribute either, you know, colonies that are either configured as two deeps or a single deep with two mediums. And that's what everybody needs to provide for this contract. Very standard, right? Great for honey extraction. You pull all your frames at the end of the contract, take them in, get all the extraction done. You got your honey bottled up or in 55-gallon drums, and you're moving on to the next job. You roll up there with, you know, like a couple of pallets on a trailer with all these horizontal hives, and it's just not going to work out for that type of work. So understanding what you're trying to do, what your goals are. Are you trying to go commercial? Are you trying to sideline and do some, you know, a couple of odds and ends pollination type jobs on the, you know, on the side? Or, you know, are you going to be an educator? Like, you may say, look, I just want to go around and go to elementary schools and teach people about honeybees. I'm retired. I'm set. I don't need any money. And so that's cool then, right? So you have a little thing you pull up in your little trailer and you've got your little viewing window and you open it up and people can look in and see the bees on the inside or whatever. Cool. Nothing wrong with that. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. I hope this is helpful. Like I said, it's really introductory, high level. It's not meant to be like a deep dive on any one way of doing things. These are things that I don't use. I don't use them because my mindset was learning how to keep bees, and then it shifted to trying to be a commercial beekeeper, then it shifted back to just a basic hobby kind of person because that's just better for my physical ability today. But I still think all of these are really neat and cool, and we're going to integrate a little bit of them in probably next year and the following year just to show people what we got here and how to use them. But that's all I've got for you today. So if you're in the U.S., happy 4th of July. If you're not in the U.S., then happy regular day of July. Special thanks to all of you who are supporting through Buy Me a Coffee and through some of the membership things we have going on over there. If you'd like to join the Discord room, we'd love to have you over there and chit-chat with us about things that are going on with beekeeping. If you don't have a mentor, we got a lot of folks in there who are actively contributing all over the world. So we appreciate everybody's help and support there. And like I mentioned, you can go to the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage there. We got some swarm trap plans, nuke plans, and a couple of things about foul brood and a couple other odds and ends. So take care, be kind to one another. Remember that I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.